We're back, people. Happy Friday, and welcome to another happy hour edition of the Stripe Show podcast, where we bring you the best analysts, personalities, and players in the game of golf. I'm your host, Samantha Marks, and I'll be bringing you some U.S. Women's Open preview and discussion podcasts over the next few days leading up to and during the tournament. Golf is not over for the year yet, people. I cannot wait to share these special guests with you. Today, just that, a very special guest, near and dear to my heart. And I love that I get to share these close relationships and discussions with you guys. So again, thanks for being here. Without further ado, the one and only Maria Fossey joins me on the other line, an outstanding LPGA Tour player, star, and runner-up in last year's Augusta National Women's Amateur, which I'm sure you all remember watching on TV, former Arkansas Razorback, and most importantly, my former teammate. Maria, thanks for making time for me today. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Sam. Doing good. Excited to be joining you guys today. Talk some golf, talk some life, and just excited to be on the podcast.
Thanks, buddy. I'm glad you made time for us today, but we're here to talk a little bit of U.S. Women's Open preview, so we'll get to that, like I told you, but I want to back it up a little bit. This is obviously, as you know, been a weird year in general in the world, but also the way that, you know, sporting calendars and all sports and how they panned out. How did you handle, and your team, because I know, you know, golfers are surrounded by a team of people. How did you guys handle the uncertainty this year with the COVID-19 pandemic raging on and canceling and rescheduling tournaments? How did you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was tough. Of course, it's been a very weird year. I don't think anybody could have predicted 2020 to be like it was or is, I guess. But I think we kind of try to take one day at a time. As silly as that sounds, especially with like my head coach, with David Ledbetter, we kind of were always looking to be ready because we never knew like, okay, we start tournaments in 3 weeks or we start tournaments in 2.5 months, right? So we never really knew. So his main goal throughout the 4 months or almost 5 months that we didn't play was like, whenever they call you, like, you better be ready, right? Mm-hmm. So I did take some time off. Especially at the beginning of when we were kind of in lockdown. But for the most part, it was just, I've been really working hard on my swing, on my physical aspect of not getting injured, not being hurt. And of course, the mental aspect of the game, because I needed to be ready. I needed to be ready to compete as soon as, like I said, they called us back. And I think ever since we came back to play, I've been solid. I mean, of course, there's a lot more that can improve and things that I can work on, but I've been very excited to see my game just be a little more steady and the things that I really worked on over the summer to kind of see them be better. So yeah, I mean, I think it was a challenge, but I'm just very thankful that I had a very good group of people around me and a group of friends that kind of just held me tight and walked with me through this tough year.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you said, you just kind of have to be ready at any time, which was kind of the weird part, because at the beginning there, we didn't know if it was going to be 2 weeks or a year.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy. So I would assume that you kind of reset your goals a little bit, right? Like, you kind of wanted to start fresh and not take it as a new season, but you kind of just had this really long extended off season in a way. How are you able to kind of reset your goals and think about it in a fresh new perspective?
Yeah, I think that was one of the hardest things, especially at the beginning, because again, we didn't know how long we're going to be in lockdown for, and it was really hard to get up in the morning and go work out or go practice or talk to my psychologist or whatever it could have been. You know, it was hard to find that drive that, I mean, us as golfers and competitors just kind of naturally have, because I didn't know, again, when we're going to play, and that was very hard. So it definitely required me to look at this year differently, like you said, to kind of set goals differently. I mean, pretty much all of the goals that I had for 2020 are way different today than that what they were January 1st. But yeah, I think I just kind of started to look at things again, just one day at a time, winning the day, making sure that I did everything in my power to get better. And then I'll go back to sleep and wake up in the morning and do it all over again. It was more of, there wasn't any more planning, I guess. There wasn't any more hoping to play all the majors or hoping to do this, mm-hmm. or hoping, you know, because we didn't know if we were going to have all the majors. We didn't know if we were going to have, I don't know, 15 tournaments or 5 tournaments. So it was more of just making sure that I went to bed every day, knowing that I got better and that I did what I needed to do.
So you talk about winning the day, and that's something that our old coach, Shauna Taylor at Arkansas, she taught us a lot about getting 1% better every day, that kind of mentality. Explain to the listeners what that means, because for us, it makes sense. For the two of us and our old teammates, it makes sense. But how, you know, how does that look for you, and how can that look for somebody who's maybe not a professional golfer or just, you know, a 9-to-5 business person? How can that look for different people?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of what getting 1% better meant for us in when we were in Arkansas, it was like you're always trying to get better and you're always trying to work on so many things to get better. Instead, if you just focused on like one little thing at a time, of course, you're going to focus on a lot of things throughout a long period of time. But if you kind of just focus on 1% of your game a day or 1% of your game a week or however long you want it to be, but if you kind of just get 1% better, it's crazy to see how much better you actually get in the long run. So it's, I think it's a more structured, I think it's a more structured way to practice, to evaluate if you're performing well or not, because you're focusing on something very small. And I mean, like you were saying, I think this applies for golf, but it can also apply for businessman, for, I don't know, relationships, for
everything.
I mean, if you just focus on one little thing at a time, I think you can put 100% of your energy on that 1%, and then you move on, and then it's 1%, and then that 1% becomes 2%, and then it goes on and on and on and on, and then before you know it, you're where you want to be.
Yeah, that's a really good way of describing it, and I think like you said, it applies to sporting people, competitors. It applies to everybody in every situation. So when you reassess those goals, were they less you don't have to tell me exactly what they were. Were they less performance based since you didn't know what the hell was going on pretty much?
Yeah, I personally don't even do a lot of performance oriented goals.
And why is that?
I don't believe we have complete control over that. I can go and say, I want to win on the LPGA Tour in 2020, right? Which, again, it's something that I want to do, right? It's not like I'm not teeing it up every week and trying to win. Like, that's
the, right.
Absolutely, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. But I try to think of those more of as dreams, right? As things that I hope to do, things that I want to do. But I don't think I have control over that. I can play lights out. I can play the best golf of my life for 4 days and still come short.
Yeah.
Right? So then that's not fair. Like, I played lights out, I did everything in my power, and then I didn't win. So then do we look at that as a failure because I didn't achieve my goal? So then that's why I don't like to use performance-oriented goals, because I don't believe they're 100% in my control. I can't control, again, during this pandemic, I can't control if I was going to play 15 weeks or 5 weeks. I couldn't control, for example, this week, we're playing in Dallas, and I couldn't control that the field went from being a regular field of 144 players to being a field of 96 players, you know? So there's things that are way outside my control that if I set up my goals to that, it's kind of hard to measure and hard to achieve goals. And I think in reality, we all want to achieve goals. We all want to get better. We all want to see check marks next to our list, you know, that we all make at the beginning of the year. So my goals are definitely more things that I know that if I do, will set me up for success. So, for example, a goal that I always set for myself is to play throughout the year without getting hurt, without getting injured.
Yeah.
Right? Well, yeah, there's a couple things that could happen that are outside my control. Maybe I hit a root playing golf. God forbid, I have an accident, and however it could be. But in reality, if I work out, if I do therapy, if I recover properly, then I shouldn't be getting hurt, right? So those things I can control. So I set a lot of little goals like that of, again, like getting 1% better. I think that's kind of the whole philosophy behind how or why I set up goals the way I do. But I think it works better for me. It makes me focus on myself and not focusing on others and or what's going on or if I'm winning, if I'm not winning. It's more of, okay, like, did you have fun today? Yes or no? Well, I did. Okay. I think that's one of the most important things that I always ask and that I always try to do when I play golf is to have fun and to enjoy. And I know for myself personally is that if I have fun, golf usually follows with a good round, right?
Yeah.
So then I ask myself, hey, did you give it all today? No. Okay. Well, then we have to work on that. I can't have that. I can't have...
Right.
I can... Sorry, like half-ass it, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I need to... So that's kind of how I go about goals. And they definitely have changed this year, but they've maintained like the same idea and ideology behind them.
Yeah. So going back to what you said about the motivation thing, because that's something that I want to talk about, because everyone loses that lack of motivation, lack of drive in various areas of their life. Like, you know, throughout life, it's just how it is with work, with relationships, with, you know, little stuff like maintaining your home and stuff like that. How did you pull yourself out of that? Because I know a lot of people struggled with that and are still struggling with that during this weird, unprecedented pandemic time. What did you do on a day-to-day basis to kind of pull yourself out of that funk?
For me, I mean, it was at least 2 or 3 weeks that, I mean, if you would have walked into my house, you would have been like, okay, she's depressed. Like,
yeah,
I was always in sweats, watching TV, eating my life away, which, again, it's okay to do, not for 3 weeks in a row, but,
right,
you know, like, it's okay just to have a lazy day and whatnot, but, like, it wasn't my, like, it wasn't who I was, I wasn't being myself, and for the people that know me, they know that I always kind of have to be doing something, gotta be on my feet, I'm very happy, and, like, always kind of trying to make people feel happy and stuff like that, and that definitely was not happening, so it was more of, like, I was tired. I was kind of just like sad that we were employing, frustrated that we didn't understand really what was going on and that we couldn't really do anything to make it better. So it was a bunch of things that were happening that were outside my control, that I was making them determine how I was feeling, right? So things, yeah, that, and I think that goes back again to goal setting. Like, I can't control the health situation in the world, right? Like, I can't control if we play golf or not, or if I can go out to a restaurant or not. Like, those things are beyond my control. So, like, I shouldn't really determine my state of mind on them. So right. Then I kind of caught myself and I was like, okay, like, I wasn't playing any golf then either. Like, I really wasn't doing anything. So then little by little, I was like, okay, how about I go play 9 holes today? And kind of, instead of riding in the car, let's see if we walk so that I kind of start moving. And
yeah,
there's a pond behind my house. It's like, okay, maybe I went and bought some fishing rods and let's see if I can catch something. And I just, like, little by little tried to get myself out of bed and tried to make myself, as weird as it sounds, but, like, get dressed and, like,
yeah,
you know, like, okay, we have to go to the store, like, stop eating Uber Eats, like, you go and cook and, like, you know, so little by little, I started to do things that just made me feel better about myself, like, things that made me happy, things I started maybe reading a book. With my roommates, we bought this, like, 2,000-piece puzzle, so even though we were still in the house, we were actively doing something, not just watching a show on TV.
I love puzzles. My family and I took that up too.
it was a lot of fun. We did a couple and it was great. So I think it was just more of like doing little things a day, like not trying to plan this day that I have something scheduled every minute of the day, but it was more of like little by little making myself go back to my regular self. And then before I knew it, I was practicing for 5-6 hours and then coming back and cooking lunch and then going back out on the course and playing 9 holes and then coming back and wanting to go out again and like being on the move like I usually was. Because again, I think I live in Florida and I was very fortunate that golf courses never closed.
Yeah.
While I was there. So that was good. I think if what really got me through it was just kind of doing little things that didn't require much and then kind of seeing how happy those things made me, like catching a fish. You have no idea how excited I get when I catch a fish. It doesn't matter if it's 2 inches or if it's a big one. I love catching a fish. And I was like, okay, if you're in the house, you can go catch a fish, right? So yeah, just little things that kind of got me going. And then they kind of just brought me back to normal, and that drive to want to go practice and want to get better kind of came back with it as well.
Why do you think that looking at things in such like a small way helps versus looking at things in such a grandiose way? Like if you immediately woke up one day and was like, okay, I'm going to go play 36 holes, you would have never done that.
Yeah.
So explain to the listeners like why that makes sense for you, because that's what we were taught in college, was always just look at things little by little. But why does that make sense for you in your game and your training?
I think it's just, let's go back to like how I was a lazy cat, like
which, like you said, that's not you. I hear that from you. I'm like, what?
yeah
but it happens,
and it happens, and I think I needed that for a little bit as well, just to kind of calm down and, I don't know, be lazy for a couple of days, but not for 3 weeks. But I think especially when you're, I mean, it's not like I was in a dark hole, but I wasn't really being myself. Like when you're kind of out of yourself, trying to do something big is, like you say, it's way harder. Like I could have never played 36. Like that's 100% correct. But getting myself to do little things and seeing how they impacted me in my state of mind, and I was happier, I was more energized, even just for going on a 20-minute walk. I would come back home and I was like, okay, what's next, right? Like I wouldn't go back and flop on the couch. Like I started notice that little by little, I wanted to do more and more and more and more. And it was all, nobody told me to do anything. It was all like, it came from me. And I think that's why it was easier for me to get through it, because I wanted to do things. I wanted to go play golf. And then I wanted to go, I don't know, on a run or whatever it was. But I think it's easier just when you really don't want to do anything, just to say, okay, every day I'm going to go on a 15-20 minute walk. And that 15-minute walk, it means that you have to at least prepare for 5 minutes to, like, I don't know, put a pair of shoes on, maybe, you know, like, so then that 15 minutes is actually 20 minutes. And then when you come back, the same thing, like if you want to flop in the couch again, you kind of have to, I mean, at least take your shoes off and
take a shower.
Yeah. You know, so it actually, it's not only that 15 minutes, but it's the preparation and then the aftermath of it. So I think it ended up impacting my life a lot more than just the 15-minute walk that I took, you know? So I just think it's easier to do it that way. It's easier to be held accountable for the little things, I believe, because you can measure them right away. You can get a feel like, hey, am I doing them? Am I not doing them? So I think that's why it's so powerful. And I'm very thankful that our coach in college kind of taught us this, if you will, or brought us into this 1% mindset. Because I think it's very powerful.
It is, for sure. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, you were able to pull yourself out of it. I know people struggle, mm-hmm. especially in this time. I mean, nothing's open. There's nothing to do.
Yep.
There's no reason to not lay in bed for three weeks, you know? And that's I feel like a lot of people, especially during the beginning, like what you were saying, that's when the world was all kind of down. Mm-hmm. And it, like, but none of us had ever lived through something like that. So we didn't know what to do, you know, it's the only thing you could do was Uber Eats. This is the only place you could, only thing you could do. So now we've got this last major of the year coming up. What have you been working on in your swing, in the gym, off the golf course? What have you been working on? Have you been making any swing changes to kind of put yourself in that best position to succeed?
Over the summer, I really worked on my swing a lot, just trying to get it to be more consistent and more repetitive, especially, of course, in times under pressure. And it's getting there. I mean, there's still a lot of work to do, but we're working very hard to make it as good as a swing as it can be.
What does that mean for you? Because I want to be more consistent too. And you don't have to give me all your secrets, but what does that look like for like a, for a day-to-day golfer that's not, you know, competing on the biggest tour, but what does that look like? What's maybe one thing we could do to kind of be more consistent? Because even if your swing is not the best swing in the world, if it's consistent, you at least know where it's going to go.
Well, I think for me, it's been just kind of making it simple, right? Like I am not breaking down my swing anymore. I'm not thinking about every single aspect of my swing anymore. All I care about is how the face comes back to the golf ball. Like, because essentially that's, I don't know, like a couple feet before the ball and couple feet after the golf ball. That's all that really matters in the golf swing. And what you do before or after, it's irrelevant. I mean, we see it with Matthew Wolff or Bryson DeChambeau, like with Jim Furyk, like they have very different golf swings, but they all work. They, you know,
yeah.
So I think for me, it's just one of the biggest things was kind of just I stopped trying to like get to perfect positions or try to make it look like picture perfect, if that makes sense, and just focus on, is it reliable? Like, is it something that I can repeat however many times? And of course, it's, I think, easier for me and for professional golfers because that's what we do for a living and we have a lot of time to just go practice and try to perfect it. But I think for an average golfer or just for a recreational golfer, like, I wouldn't really focus that much on my golf swing. I think a lot of the things that get people are decision-making, where they can pull out a shot 1 out of 10 times and they think they can do it when they never practice. So I'm like, I would never go for some of the shots that I see, like some of my friends hit. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, of course that's going in the water. Like, where else do you think it was going to go? Like, there's no chance. Like, you play once every month and you think you can hit this low slice, like Tiger hits and like twirl your club.
I'm like,
of course that's not going to happen. So I think that's what gets a lot of people. I mean, of course, there's technical stuff. And I mean, I'm definitely not qualified to be talking about technical aspects of golf. But I do know, like, decision making, like I see it with my brothers. They're not very good golfers, but they like to just go out a few times a year. And I'm like, OK, why are you doing this? He's like, well, like, because I see it on TV. I'm like, exactly. You see it on TV. You don't see Chuck over here trying to do it. Like, you know, like it's...
That's what Mikey and Shauna kind of taught us, was like, hit the shot you know you can hit.
Yeah, and I don't think you need to try to be making anything special. Bogeys are okay. I mean, for some people, even a double bogey is okay. Like, you can recover from that. But if you make a 12, like, unless you're Tiger Woods and you come back with 4 birdies at Augusta, it's kind of hard to do.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think for a recreational golfer, it's just being a little bit smarter. I know it's exciting to hit the perfect golf shot and to see the ball do exactly what you wanted it to do. But I mean, and even us that work so hard to make it perfect don't get our ways a lot of times, you know? So I think that's where a lot of people can definitely save some shots and it could be a lot more fun for them because I don't think anybody likes a 9 or a 10.
Ugh, not for me. What is a typical day of training and practice look like for you versus like this week when you're at an event or in an off week? How's that different?
So if it's an off week, I kind of have two types of off weeks. I have an off week before a tournament, or I have an off week that I have like 2 or 3 weeks before the next tournament, right? So like in that time, in that period of time, I can work on my swing. I can be more technical. I can try to make my swing more consistent, more repetitive. Like I hit a lot of golf balls and I don't really play a lot of golf. It's more of hitting a lot of wedges, putting a lot, but like doing a lot of reps.
Mm-hmm.
But then if it's the week before a tournament, I mean, I would rarely be on the range. I'll be on the range maybe warming up and maybe like hitting some shots, like trying to do shot shaping to feel comfortable with that. Maybe like a wedge ladder just to make sure that my wedges are going the distances that I need them to. But then most of my time I spend on the golf course just playing and not really, I don't really take videos of myself during or before a tournament. I don't really care about how the swing's looking. All I care about is how the balls, my ball striking is. So it's, there's a lot of playing. There's, I'll go out and play by myself with two balls, maybe play best ball, or then the next day play worst ball. So I just kind of spend a lot of time on the course with, because it's kind of more of what I'm going to be doing the next week rather than just hitting a lot of golf balls. And then during the tournament, I'm not one to practice a lot on site unless there's something really bad happening and, well, fixing. Yeah. But I don't usually practice a whole lot. Again, I like to do most of my stuff on the golf course. If it's a golf course that I know, I like to go on Mondays and just bring my wedges and my putter and just chip and putt on the course. Because, mm-hmm. again, even though it doesn't matter how good of a short game area or a putting green you have on the practice facilities, like I don't think there's anything like just going and doing the work on the golf course. So I spend a bunch of time out there, and then I would maybe play nine holes on Tuesday and nine holes on Wednesday. Or if I don't know the course, then I would play 18 holes and then evaluate which nine I want to play again, and I would go and play that one again. And honestly, it's very, very relaxed, very laid back. I mean, I don't try to burn myself because we do play on a normal year a lot of golf, 4 or 5 weeks in a row, at least for me. And at the end, it gets exhausting if you actually, like, I mean, for me personally, I couldn't do it to where I would practice every day for a couple hours and then go play golf and then come back and do it again and do that for 5 straight weeks. I don't possibly think my body is made for that. There's people that are okay with it, but for me personally, it's just more about making sure that I'm performing. Like, again, I don't really care about how the swing looks as long as my ball striking is where I want it to be.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And that's a very unique approach. I mean, you see the guys on tour, on the range, videoing their swing, looking at stuff. I mean, everyone's different, yeah. But that's what works for you. So coming up next for the LPGA, it's the U.S. Women's Open in Houston. What do you know about the golf course? It's Champions Golf Club, playing two courses. Do you know anything about it? Have you been there?
I have not been there. But my caddy was actually there last week. He spent close to 12 hours on each course, just looking at all the different lines that we could possibly take, the shots that we might hit onto the green, some pin locations, just really getting a feel of what the course looks like, or the courses, I guess I should say. Because again, the fact that we play two courses, that's kind of different and new. And so he wanted to make sure that we were prepared for the week. So he knows the course. He's very comfortable with the work he did, and he's excited. He's like, you're going to love it. It's pretty straightforward off the tee, which means I'm going to be able to hit my driver quite often, which I'm very excited about. I love to hit bumps out there, so I'm pretty excited about that. And then he was saying that the greens are big, they're quick. It's in perfect condition. Even last week that he was there, he was surprised by how good of a golf course it was. So he's super excited, which makes me very excited. And kind of from talking to other players, they all say that it's a very good golf course, that it's going to be a good challenge. It's playing long, it's going to be cold. So I think it's going to be a very good test of golf. And I can't wait. I think it's going to be a lot of fun and a great way to end our year.
Yeah. So speaking of the cold, because I know it's cold in Dallas right now, how do you deal with that? I mean, there's a lot of people up north who just, I mean, me, you know me, I hate the cold. I'm not going out in the cold. I'm not playing golf in the cold. Life is too short to play golf when you're freezing. So I'm not doing it. But there are people who do it. And how do you kind of ignore it? Does that make sense? Like, how do you like just forget about the cold?
Yeah. So actually, funny enough, with my caddy, we kind of have a bet going that we can't complain about the weather, whether it's cold or hot or rainy or whatever it might be, or windy. We cannot complain about the weather. Because again, going back to what you can control and what you can't control, weather is one of the things that either you just embrace or you're going to be miserable, basically. For me, not being able to talk about it with him really helps because, I mean, yeah, you're going to maybe talk about it with one of the players or whatever, but like in reality, most of our conversations are between caddy and player. They're not really between player and player or, you know, so I talk to my caddy more than I talk to anybody else out there. So for us, it's more of like, hey, like, we just take it as it comes. We don't complain. We try to make the best out of it. And we try to be prepared with hand warmers and warm clothes and gloves to keep my hands warm and to keep feel in my hands, I guess, because they could really get cold out here. And we just try to take it as it comes and we prepare for it. I mean, I guess there's really not much we can do to make it better other than just have all the equipment that we can possibly have to try to stay warm. And we try to stay moving. We try not to stand still for long periods of time so that I can keep swinging and that still looks good. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's a mental challenge on top of a physical challenge because, of course, conditions get a lot harder. We had winds up to 20, 25 miles yesterday on the course, and I think it's going to be like that throughout the weekend. So it'll be a challenging next few days, but it's going to be like that for everybody, and you just kind of have to adapt and try to make it the best you can. I think it's more of, I think, how you approach things than anything else. So you just kind of have to, I'm not saying be positive about it, but just be like, okay, this is what we get and that's it. And
try to, yeah, it is what it is.
And if you don't want to be here, then, well, you picked the wrong sport to play, you know? Like, we do play outdoors and rain and cold and wind are some of the things that can come at us. And you just kind of have to be okay with it.
Yeah. So this is one of the last questions I wanted to ask you because I'm very curious of your opinion. So we've seen like Brooks Koepka will get up on the podium and say, you know, whatever he said about caring about majors more than he cares about regular week's events. How do you look at a major week, or do you look at a major week differently than a regular week event? What's the mindset that goes into this week in Dallas versus next week at the US Open in Houston?
I think, at least for me, I try to look at them as golf tournaments. I think looking at majors differently for me wouldn't work. It's just putting more pressure on them.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's still golf. I'm still trying to play as good as I can, to shoot the lowest score possible. I mean, that's not going to change on a major, and that's not going to change on a regular week event. So, I don't know. For me, like, it doesn't work like that. For him, definitely works. We've seen how dominating he is in majors. But I mean, I think it's kind of a very personal opinion. It's different for everybody. You see during majors, all the coaches show up and agents and everybody comes to the majors. And I'm like, in my opinion, that just makes it a bigger deal than it should be. Because again, it's still just another golf tournament, and you still have to just go out there and play golf. So I try to approach them the same way. I mean, of course, I prepare differently for a major because they're usually a little bit harder. So then, some of the shots that I'll try to practice prior to the week of a major are definitely different. But I think that's probably the only thing that I do differently the week prior to a major than what I would do prior to a regular event.
No, that makes sense. That's a good way. Like, everything you've said kind of boils back down to, like, it's just the way you look at things, right? And I think that that's something we were fortunately very fortunate enough to be taught in college, and we had that mindset and the great coaches to teach us that. So very great insight there, Maria. So we like to close with some rapid fire questions. These are totally random. So just give me the first thing that you think of when I ask you these questions. Good. Okay. Favorite golf course you ever played?
Lake Merced, just outside San Francisco.
And you've played Augusta National. So
yes,
that's,
it's a controversial topic, but, Augusta is amazing, but in my personal opinion, I don't think Augusta would be Augusta if they didn't have the Masters. And I'm just going to leave that
we're
out
gonna leave, We're going to leave that there. We're going to leave that there.
I might lose some followers. I might lose some fans. But I think Augusta is very special, and I love it. And let me say this. If I could play a round of golf and I could choose the setting, I would choose that Saturday at Augusta, at the Augusta National Women's Amateur, hands down. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
Yep.
That was the most amazing round of golf I've ever played.
Yeah.
But I love Lake Merced. I think it's such an amazing golf course. I played the U.S. Girls Junior there in 2012, I believe. And it was amazing. I loved it. And the LPGA actually had a, I don't know if they still have it, honestly, but they used to have an event there. So, yeah.
Okay. I love that answer. Getting a little controversial towards the end here with not a lot of time left. I see how you roll. Okay. We've got a few more. Preferred seat on an airplane.
Window.
Favorite club and driver. Favorite non-sports celebrity.
Chris Hemsworth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Favorite kind of pizza.
Cheese. Just cheese? Five cheese maybe on a good day, but yeah, just a good cheese pizza. I love cheese pizza.
Okay. Who do you want to win the Super Bowl?
Patriots or the Bucks. Either one. I'm a Tom Brady fan.
So I was going to say, Tom Brady. All right. How do you like your steak cooked?
Medium.
Favorite candle scent?
Like tropical, something like that reminds me of the beach.
Yeah. Okay. Favorite movie?
Ooh, that's a good one. Mamma Mia came to mind, so I guess I'll go with that.
That is a good one. That's a classic. That and then favorite non-golf vacation you've ever taken?
Okay, I went fishing on the White River for Thanksgiving.
So you're just a fisher. You're just a fishing gal now.
I'm becoming one. and I loved it. It was like I just love being outdoors. There wasn't any service, so like my phone didn't even come with me. And it was amazing. Yeah, just five people, and that's pretty much the amount of people that I saw for the weekend. There's really nobody out there. You just kind of go and do your thing, and I love that. Kind of helps you, I don't know, help me disconnect and reconnect with myself, and it was pretty cool.
That does sound really nice. I think I went fishing once, and I did catch a little tiny one, and I'm with you, though. That feeling is
yes,
like,
whenever I'm like reading them in, I'm like, this is good.
I did it. That's awesome. Well, Maria, this was so much fun. Thanks for joining
me. Thank you, Sam. I'm excited to hear the podcast. And thanks for the invite. And I hope to be back with you guys.
Of course. Well, guys, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for listening to another Friday Happy Hour edition of the Stripe Show podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you get every episode right to your phone. Never miss another chance of hearing us bring you everything you need to know in the game. I'm your host, Samantha Marks. Travis will be back next week with a pretty exciting interview with a key player on Justin Thomas's team. So get excited for that. Hey, we're so glad you're here, and we'll see you next time. Cheers. Make it a great and safe weekend.
Let's take a second to talk about the guys and girls over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation of having the most cutting-edge technology in their golf balls that the industry has seen in quite some time. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is changing the script of golf technology through the perimeter-weighted designs, use of high-density particles, and even a nano-transitional layer in their latest creation, which offers players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course and extreme velocity off the tee. They already have their award-winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, but the new Vero X1 is the highest performance ball to date. With their full suite of golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill levels. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.